This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sinbin by Maria Lewis, narrated by Elizabeth Hart and Joe Hempel. Chapter 1. Zoe, Boston, Massachusetts. I am the queen of bad decisions. Now, before you start thinking that I'm overly dramatic, let it be known that, boy, do I wish that was the case. But no, I have a problem that's otherwise known as no self-control. Listen to the following. My freshman year at the University of Michigan, when I drunkenly professed my love for my English teacher via email, the recipient of that email, my professor, naturally, the next day I found myself on a transfer list to another class. My ex-boyfriend Mark, who apparently had a bad habit of humping his next-door neighbor whenever I worked overtime, discovering them together on our anniversary was just the cliche icing on the cake, and so was the way I stealthily slashed his tires the following evening, a la Carrie Underwood. Andre Beaumont. Sorry, but we're not even getting into this one. I'll only mention that because of my indiscretion, big muscles and silky smiles that hint at bed sheets and panty-dropping sex are always my downfall. My life has been one downward spiral for the last 342 days. But all that changes today. Here. Right now. I flash a bright smile at the CEO of Golden Lights Media. Golden Lights is Boston's premier entertainment marketing empire, and hopefully my next place of work. Believe it, and you will achieve it. That might as well be my tagline. I can't say thank you enough for asking me in for a second interview, Mr. Collins.
Zoe.
Mr. Collins utters my name the way some might say, Satan, like he's worried he might catch my plague just by sitting opposite me. My smile slips, just a little. Think of the job, Zoe. Think of the job. Yes, Mr. Collins? Heaving a big sigh, Walter Collins drops back in his seat to study me with stoic brown eyes.
Zoe, Miss McKenzie.
This cannot be good. I gird myself for the worst, flipping my folder up against my chest like a body shield. It's packed with my resume, cover letter, and three letters of reference. It's also packed with my hopes, which are seconds away from shattering, if the CEO's expression is anything to go by.
Listen, Miss McKenzie,
he says again, scrubbing a hand over his bearded jawline.
You've got the right qualifications for the position.
I know what's coming. The urge to scream is overwhelming. I bite down on my lower lip and count to 10. 1, 2, 3.
But while I'd love to welcome you out into our public relations team, I've done a little research since our preliminary interview, and what I've found, well, I can't say that I'm all too impressed with your professional conduct.
I'm sure he's putting that mildly, just as I'm sure he practiced that exact line in the mirror this morning. His words have a pre-orchestrated feel to them, and he delivers them somberly, in the same tone that my former employer oh so graciously gave me the news that I was fired. You'd think someone had died the way he'd... Oh, wait. That was my career. Slowly, I meet Mr. Collins's gaze, and I make the decision that I have nothing to lose. Not my pride or my dignity, nor am I harboring any long-standing too high expectations. I know what the score is, and I'm willing to play to this CEO's fiddle, as long as I come out with a job on the other side. Mr. Collins, I say carefully, I understand your reservations, but I can promise you that what occurred a year ago won't be repeated. Nervously, I tap my fingers against the folder, internally debating how to approach the situation. I straighten my shoulders. After my transgression last year, I've had quite a while to think over my faulty decisions. Mr. Collins does not look impressed. Panic enters my body. After almost a year of applying to jobs in my field, Golden Lights Media is my last hope, my last hurrah. I'm 27 years old and living with my dad and stepmom. If my dad has his way, I'll be working at his restaurant full-time like a good daughter, while also babysitting my half-sister on my off days. I love Tia, but even my love for my 12-year-old half-sister can't make up for losing out on my dream. Permanently. Mr. Collins doesn't know it yet, but he's about to offer me this gig as the new public relations coordinator for this firm. I plant the folder down on the desk with the flat of my palm. Let's do a trial run.
Beg pardon?
Bam. Stifling the abrupt pleasure of throwing the CEO off his game, I say, a trial run. You want to hire me, but you're not sure if it's a good idea. I'm convinced that you won't regret it. As you told me in our first meeting, Mr. Collins, my resume intrigues you. I've worked for all sorts of mainstream celebrities, including some of Detroit's biggest sports stars. Brown eyes narrow on my face.
Including Andre Beaumont.
My knee-jerk reaction to hearing that name is to throw something. Maybe pound back a bottle of Jose Cuervo, because there is nothing I would like more than to forget the feeling of Beaumont between my legs, as he proves once and for all that multiple orgasms are a thing, or rather, a thing that can happen with men. To be fair, my vibrator does a solid enough job on its own. But I digress. I clear my throat, awkwardly reaching for a small glass of water, and downing half for fortitude. Yes, I murmur. My former list of clients does include Mr. Beaumont. Mr. Collins studies me, his brown eyes unblinking.
Let me make sure I'm understanding you correctly, Miss McKenzie. You would like for me to give you a trial run?
He scratches at his perfectly manicured beard.
Does this entail assigning you a client? Do I hold you to the same standard as the other publicists on my team?
He drops his elbows to the desk and leans forward.
Do I draw up a contract that reaffirms that you are not allowed to sleep with a client just to be certain that we're on the same page?
My cheeks burn with embarrassment, and the words die on my tongue. It was only one time. It just so happens that the one time was also caught on camera, then shared across the internet. I promise you, until the day that your stepmom texts you to say that she never knew about the birthmark on your butt, you're not living life hard enough. When silence steals my tongue, Mr. Collins turns to his computer. His fingers fly across the keys, tap, tap, tapping away with all the speed of a Tasmanian devil on speed. He clicks the mouse, another click, two more, and then he swings back around to face me.
All right, Miss McKenzie.
He folds his arms across his chest and stares me down over the bridge of his nose.
I'll go along with your trial run.
My heart drops clear down to my feet. You will? Way to sound confident, Zoe.
Yes,
Mr. Collins murmurs.
I will. I'll give you 1 month, as you suggested, and one client.
I'm not sure whether I ought to cry with relief or laugh at the fact that my desperate ploy is working. I do a little of both, and Mr. Collins gives me such a stern side-eye that my sobbing laughter dies an awkward death in my throat. Straightening my shoulders again, I realize that I'm preening. Down, girl. Down. I drop my shoulders, lift my chin instead. Thank you, Mr. Collins. Thank you so much. Finally. Finally, I'm catching a break. The first professional break I've been given since the entire world found out that I slept with Andre Beaumont, NHL superstar. The former right wing for the Detroit Red Wings, King Sinbin, as raving hockey fans like to call him. Thanks to his lethal skill set on the ice, a skill set which regularly lands him in the penalty box. Maybe if I play my cards right, I'll shed the dreadful nickname the media gave me, Moaning Zoe. Maybe if I play my cards right, I can finally get my life back on track. I promise that you won't regret this, I say, reining in the urge to gush. Whoever you assign to me will be perfect, and I guarantee that Golden Lights Media won't have seen a better PR coordinator. There's a knock on the closed office door. I don't turn around. Everything that I want is at this desk. My hands itch to sign whatever contract my new boss might have stashed away in the drawers. My heart stampedes in my chest, overjoyed with the fact that after 342 days, I finally have the chance to prove myself. I'm not just the woman whose career took a hard tackle. I'm not just the woman crashing on her parents' couch and watching the Disney Channel every night with her sister. I'm not just the woman who threw everything away for 30 minutes of hot sex with the sexiest hockey player in the NHL, a hockey player who had no interest in talking to the media on my behalf. No, the jerk quietly accepted his trade to the Boston Blades and never looked back.
Miss McKenzie,
Mr. Collins says, recapturing my attention.
You're in luck. My assistant, Gwen James, just signed a new client, and we're pretty eager to get him settled in with an agent who will keep him in line and ensure that his public reputation remains scandal-free.
Scandal-free is my middle name, sir. Okay, slight exaggeration, but it used to be my middle name, you know, before the whole thing went down with Beaumont. And it might as well be my first name now, since I fled Michigan to Boston 6 months ago in a life do-over. If Mr. Collins picks up the irony in my words, he doesn't mention it.
1 month, Ms. McKenzie. We'll be coming back around to this in 30 days. But I'm telling you right now, if I hear one sliver of gossip about you, your so-called trial run will become null and void. Do you understand?
Do I understand? Hell to the yes, I do. Absolutely. You can be confident that I'll be on my best behavior.
Brilliant.
He gives one short nod, then presses a buzzer on his desk. The door swings open as I turn around, and a woman with voluminous red hair waltzes in with a spring to her step. Walter, I've got our new client here. Her wide-eyed gaze lands on me. Oh, crap. I know that look. It's the one I get when people recognize me. And by that, I mean they've seen the banana-shaped birthmark on my ass, as well as a quick glimpse of my face from the security camera video. Kill me now, please. Miss McKenzie, she says, coming over to shake my hand. My name is Gwen. It's great to have you. Walter already let me know that you're on board. Let me introduce you to our newest client. I try not to let my hopes lift. Golden Lights Media is the top public relations company in Boston. From actresses to sports heroes to politicians, Golden Lights has backed anyone who's anyone in the Bay State. My gaze flicks from Gwen to the empty doorway. Who have they paired me with? I'm hoping for someone awesome, like Mark Wahlberg, maybe Matt Damon. Hey, a girl can dream, right? When a shadow fills the doorway, an acute sense of dread settles in my stomach. That shadow is familiar, and that body even more so. I tilt my head, squinting against the afternoon glare from the sun for a better look. Leather shoes slip against the marble flooring as the shadow enters Mr. Collins's office. Inch by inch, the body emerges as my sight readjusts. Dark jeans cling to muscular thighs, and a white t-shirt is half-heartedly tucked into the pants. Something about this isn't right. I shift in my chair, wishing that I could see his face, so I want to reach into my purse for my sunglasses. Unlike Gwen, who pranced right into the light like a beam of sunshine, this person hugs the darkness.
Ms. McKenzie,
Mr. Collins says, interrupting my thoughts.
Might I introduce you to our newest client?
And that's when the day from hell is replaced. Because out from the shadows emerges disastrous mistake numbers 1 through infinity.
Hello, Zoe.
Andre Beaumont, the devil himself. Oh, hell no. Chapter 2. Zoe. He looks exactly the same. For all of his faults, and there are many, trust me, Andre Beaumont is certainly not lacking in the looks department. Perfectly disheveled dark hair is swept back from his face, Dark eyes, the color of Italian espresso, travel up the length of my body, starting at my no-nonsense red pumps and working all the way up to my equally no-nonsense black dress. That hard gaze pauses at my breasts, not that there's much to speak of, considering that I'm willowy at best, before landing on my face. He doesn't even have the good grace to look ashamed for his thorough once-over. My hand itches to leave my side and flash him the bird, and I sit on my fingers to keep from giving in to temptation. Speaking of temptation, it's overrated, officially. The sound of Mr. Collins clearing his throat breaks my death glare.
"Ms. McKenzie,"
he says, coming around his desk to greet Andre with a handshake.
"I trust that you recall Mr. Beaumont."
Sarcasm. It's like music to my ears. Swallowing a hot retort, I smile blandly at my new boss, as well as the man responsible for my downfall. "Yes, of course." Brushing invisible lint from my dress, I stand and walk over to the two men. The two couldn't be more opposite. While a gray suit encases Walter's thin frame, casual is the name of Andre's ensemble. He's completed the look with a black leather jacket, the same buttery soft jacket that I remember pooled on the floor as I slipped my fingers over his ribbed abs. "Do not go there, Zoe." I hold my hand out stiffly, still faking a welcoming smile that might crack my cheeks. "Mr. Beaumont, it's nice to see you again." Andre takes my hand. Instead of shaking it like a normal person, he gives a sharp tug and pulls me close. So close that I can't help but remember firsthand that his irises and pupils are one synonymous black hue. So close that the fading bruise on his cheek, no doubt from a fight on the ice, catches the light and glimmers purple and yellow. So close that when he drops a brief kiss to each of my cheeks, I catch the scent of sandalwood off his skin.
"It's been too long, Zoe."
"Or not long enough," I mutter under my breath.
"What was that, Miss McKenzie?"
Mr. Collins stares me down, and it's so fierce, so intimidating, that I have to physically push back my shoulders to avoid withering like a dejected wallflower. Right. Must be on good behavior. Suddenly, I'm not so sure that this trial run idea was a good one.
"Walter, I'm glad that Gwen convinced me to come on board with Golden Lights Media,"
Andre says, breaking the uncomfortable moment in a rare show of, well, hell, I don't think it's compassion. Andre doesn't do compassion for anyone.
"After the work I've seen your firm do for Duke Harrison, I'm positive that you'll have the media thinking that I've turned a new leaf in no time."
Call me cynical, but I doubt Andre has turned over anything, leaves or otherwise. I've followed mentions of him in the media closely this last year, closely enough to know that he's panicking. Not on the ice. The big, bad Andre Beaumont is as fast and dangerous in the ice rink as he was on the day that the Detroit Red Wings drafted him from Northwestern University. But outside the rink, that's another story. The tabloids love to dish dirt on his love life, which generally involves leggy supermodels, followed by mentions of little ol' me. Will Andre Beaumont finally move on from moaning Zoe? Only time will tell. Or another recent favorite of mine. A trusted source has told us that moaning Zoe has moved to Boston to be with hockey superstar Andre Beaumont. Will the couple finally shed their dirty laundry and come clean? You'd think that after nearly a year the media frenzy over a security camera catching us doing the naughty in the Red Wings laundry room would have died down. Alas, each new girl that lands in Andre's muscular embrace only adds more fuel to the gossip rags. I like to think of it as divine justice. Only, I'd prefer not to have my name dragged through the mud in the same dirty swipe. Retreating to his desk again, Mr. Collins takes a seat.
"We're pleased to have you, Mr. Beaumont."
He shifts stacks of papers to the side and then pulls out a thick binder.
"Yours is the exact type of case that we enjoy taking on."
Andre's thumbs go to the belt loops on his jeans and his rugged features tighten.
An easy case, I hope.
He asks. Damn him. But his voice still hasn't lost its sexy appeal. Gritty, raspy. I once asked him if he smoked cigarettes, but he denied it vehemently.
My body is a temple.
And all that jazz, he said. He's right. His body is a temple. A temple he chooses to share with any Jane, Kathy, and Sally who comes his way. Not, of course, that I pay that close attention to the tabloids. Walter's hand visibly pauses in the midst of flipping open the binder. A binder that I can only conclude holds all of Andre's deepest and darkest secrets. Walter looks to his assistant, the redhead, who visibly blanches and then launches into a flurry of motion. Mr. Beaumont.
You can call me Andre. The formality is a bit much.
Right, right. Gwyn slides a glance my way, and I arch my brows in a helpless gesture. If she's looking for help, she's come to the wrong place. Andre wouldn't listen to me, even if I hogtied him to Mr. Collins's office chair and threatened bodily harm. Realizing that I'm no help, Gwyn fluffs her red hair like it's her body armor, and then takes a deep breath. Mr. Beaumont. His buttery leather jacket creases along the shoulder as he lifts a hand to stop her.
Andre.
Right. Andre. Another deep breath. See, the thing is, Andre, you've provided us with a very different sort of case than your teammate. For the most part, Mr. Harrison kept to a relatively low profile over the last number of years. As you might imagine, this made my job easier. With you, however...
Just tell him, Gwyn.
Mr. Collins jumps in with a flick of his wrist. A shiny gold Rolex sparkles under the office lights.
You're pussyfooting around the issue.
Gwyn mutters something unintelligible beneath her breath. Then, shoulders straightening, she announces, You scare people, Andre. Walter Collins harumphs his approval. Gwyn looks on the verge of vomiting. And then the man, who is known for being as impenetrable as finely cut marble, reacts. His jaw drops open, and I feel the most ridiculous urge to clap my hands. His powerful shoulders twitch as he sharply glances back at me, and I realize that I've released an ill-timed squeak of delight. Oops. Pardon me. Andre whips back around to face off against Gwyn.
It's my job to scare people,
he growls. Correction, Gwyn says, lifting her finger like she's checking the wind direction. The Blades hired you to intimidate other hockey players. On the ice, not the media off the ice. She does have a point. Most players ham up to the cameras after a game, or at least they're reasonably polite. Andre Beaumont is not most hockey players. Only the bravest of souls dare approach him in the locker room, and those numbers grow fewer by the game based on what I've heard trickling down the grapevine. Back when I handled his PR, he'd had a similar snarly disposition, but he cleaned up the attitude whenever I laid down the law.
So the fact that I don't smile is a problem?
Andre's voice is hard, surly. Gwyn's bright smile cracks, just enough to see that she's desperately trying not to wince. That's one problem.
And the other?
Women. Silence descends over the room, tense and oppressive. Gwyn resolutely holds Andre's gaze, though I swear her right eye twitches, slowly, as though tasting the word women and finding it repulsive, Andre mutters,
So what? I date. Is that a crime?
Frequently, Gwyn interjects, still standing strong, bless her heart. You date frequently. This time, there's no mistaking the way Andre looks at me over his shoulder. His dark eyes glitter with frustration, and his full mouth flattens into a thin line. Without taking his gaze off me, he tells Gwyn,
I hadn't heard that it's a crime to test the waters.
His gaze dips to my mouth, and I fight off a shiver of unwanted desire.
Sometimes it's not what you expected.
This time, it's my jaw that slackens. The jerk. Blood centers in my forehead, making it pulse like it's under siege from a bloody stampede of wild elephants. Letting my fury carry me, I meet his gaze and sweetly reply, "That's what happens when you take too many dips in the ocean, Mr. Beaumont. You choke on salt water." Walter slaps a closed fist to his chest. Gwyn lets out a scandalized, tinkling laugh. Andre and I exchange a look that can only be categorized as pure snark. If snark had a look, I mean. I stare him down, refusing to look away until he breaks eye contact first. But when I was at, my prime, my clients fondly called me the Barracuda. Like the sharp-toothed beasts roaming the Amazon, I rarely stepped down from a fight. I learned from the very best, my mother, who, despite raising me on her own, worked 3 jobs and never failed to put food on the table for the 2 of us. I count out the seconds that it takes for Andre to glance away. 9. But glance away he does, and that slight measure of victory sends a thrill dancing down my spine. He may have worn me down a year ago, toppling over my defenses and warming up my girl parts as well as my heart, but no longer. Nope. I wouldn't sleep with Andre Beaumont again if he were the last man on Earth. Let me amend that. I would sleep with Andre Beaumont if he were the last man on Earth, but only because I feel a very ingrained sense of duty to the world to continue procreation and to not let our species die. You're welcome. The sound of Mr. Collins faking a hacking fit jars me back to the present. He points at Gwen, as if telling her to take the reins and handle the misbehaving child. Her eyes drift up to the ceiling. I wonder if she's praying for strength. After long seconds, Gwen says, "We're aware of your slipping sponsorships. Last week alone you lost both Nike and Gatorade. That's a very big deal, especially for someone already coming off a big scandal. Thankfully, I am not wearing a scarlet A on my shirt, and no one looks at me. Whether you choose to admit it or not, your attitude might not be an issue on the ice, but it is absolutely affecting your gameplay off of it. Unless you're interested in losing every sponsor you have currently, you're going to have to do what we suggest, Mr. Beaumont." This time, he doesn't even bother to correct her. Although he's still presenting me with his back, I swear that I can see the wheels turning in his handsome head. Does he realize where I fit into this equation? That, more likely than not, he's stuck with me, maybe indefinitely? The irony would kill me if it weren't for the fact that I'm too busy staving off the panic. Andre and I, we aren't strangers. Far from it, actually. I handled his PR for nearly a year, while we certainly butted heads on more than one occasion. I haven't forgotten the way that our business relationship slowly converged with a personal one. Snack runs after a particularly long session with reporters, jogging on early Sunday mornings, whenever he wasn't out of town for games. Double dates when I caught a man's notice. Whenever this happened, and not to totally throw myself under the bus, but the dating thing wasn't frequent. Andre always agreed to come along with whatever girl he was sexing up that day. Andre's intimidating demeanor kept the creepers at bay. Hard as it might be to believe, Andre had my back, just as I had his, until we let one explosive kiss ruin everything. And it really did ruin everything, because that one spontaneous kiss led to the laundry room fiasco, and obviously we all know how that turned out. AKA that time my birthmarked butt hit every small screen in America. It's as horrifying as it sounds. Andre rakes his fingers through his thick, dark hair.
"So what you're saying is that either I take your advice or I'm screwed. Do I have the gist of it?"
Gwyn doesn't wince, but there's no hiding the way her gaze shifts to the floor. "If you want to keep your current lifestyle, then yes, that about covers everything." For a long moment, no one says a word. Then he grumbles.
"Fine. Whatever you have to do about this, then we'll do it."
Except that he doesn't say about, but rather a boot, because naturally he's Canadian. A Canadian who isn't all unicorns and rainbows and nice, in other words. Andre is practically unrecognizable amongst his own kind. Great. The tense lines in Gwen's face ease. Then I'd love to officially introduce you to your new publicist. Andre's back stiffens.
You won't be in charge of my case?
Oh, no, Gwen says with a flippant wave of her hand. Golden Light is expanding to other cities, and I've got about 10 different clients right now, one of whom can't complete a sentence without dropping the F-bomb. No, Andre, you'll be paired up with our newest addition to the Golden Lights media family. Slowly, as though his body is battling a rough current in the ocean, Andre twists at the waist to look at me. Seeing the realization spark in his expression might be my new favorite memory. Right after the time my only pair of Manolo Blahniks arrived in the mail, and I slipped those beautiful babies onto my feet while I ate cereal and watched reruns of Friends. But this moment, oh boy, it's a good one. I'd be lying if I said I haven't waited a year to see Andre Beaumont look off-kilter and just a little bit scared. His eyes glitter, but the inscrutable emotion banks as his mouth turns down, the quiet before the storm.
No.
It's all he says, and yet the two-letter word is everything. I grin, making it extra toothy just to show him that I am unfazed. With a little finger wave, I say, Hello, Andre. A pulse ticks to life in his jaw.
No.
Didn't you say it's been too long? I could have sworn that I heard you.
No.
I think you did, I murmur sweetly, just short of batting my eyelashes at the man who I've dreamed of beating with his own hockey stick between the legs where it hurts.
Walter.
Andre twists around to face the CEO of Golden Lights. He clears his throat, then does so again.
Mr. Collins, with all due respect, I demand someone else handle my case. Considering my past with Miss McKinsey, it only makes sense.
Walter tucks his hands under his armpits.
I'm sorry, Mr. Beaumont, we've hired Miss McKinsey on a 30-day trial, so unless something momentous happens during the interim, you have her and her only.
A trial. Andre drawls. I don't like the way he rolls the word over on his tongue, like he's considering the ramifications of his next few words.
And if she doesn't last the 30 days? Then you'll be assigned to someone else, and we'll have to meet with Miss McKinsey one-on-one to discuss her position with Golden Lights.
I don't like the way that Andre glances at me over his shoulder, a considering look darkening his rugged features. And I especially don't like the way he turns to look at me fully, crosses his arms over his chest, and huskily says,
Let's hope she makes it to 30 days, then.
Chapter 3. Andre. She looks exactly the same. As I listen to Coach Hall mouth off about shitty stick play at the front of the locker room, that's the only thought running on repeat in my head. She looks exactly the same. I'm not thinking about riding the Chicago Blackhawks hard enough that they'll cry themselves to sleep tonight. I'm not thinking about the fact that I've already dropped gloves twice in the last two periods, and subsequently served my penance in the sin bin. For once, hockey isn't my focus. She is. Zoe McKenzie. The one woman who I was never supposed to see again. Jesus H. Christ, she looked good today. Criminally good, even. Slim-fitting dress, her usual. Heels that were painted the same color red as her lips. In the span of 1 second, I'd experienced a range of emotions that rocked me back like a hard-hitting body check. All at once, I'd wanted to tug her into my arms and inhale what I hoped was still her favorite citrusy perfume, just as badly as I'd wanted to turn on my heel and get the fuck out of there. I hadn't expected to see her in Walter Collins's office. Hell, I hadn't even known that she'd moved to Boston. Zoe was a Detroit girl through and through, and having her here in the same city was like liquid heat in my veins.
Beaumont!
I lift my gaze from my skates to Hall, whose face is blustery with agitation.
Yeah, Coach?
His white mustache twitches as he clamps his teeth down on a toothpick.
I need you to get out there, Sin. Do what you do best. We're fucking behind by 3, and unless someone's up to scoring a goddamn hat trick tonight, then I'm gonna need you to take control.
No one asks what he's talking about. Aside from Duke Harrison, our main man between the pipes, I'm the biggest guy on the ice. If you believe the rumors, I'm also the meanest son of a bitch to play, too. The Sin Bin might as well be my second home. I'll be honest, it's a tough balance to find. Play hard enough that grown men flee in the opposite direction when they see you coming, but don't play so hard that you're ejected from the game. The league doesn't support enforcers anymore. We're a dying breed, thanks to the changing safety regulations over the years. But when push comes to shove, we're still expected to step forward and do our job. It's a balance I've perfected over the years, and Coach Sam Hall knows that well. King Sin Bin. Earned the damn nickname when I was 21 years old, still scrappy and grappling players left and right as we hustled for the puck at the boards. Back then, my aggressive style of play was a bonus. Nowadays, it's more of a liability. Except for times like now, when we're lagging behind, playing slow and reinforcements are needed. In other words, I'm needed. 15 minutes later, I'm doing exactly what Coach ordered, driving my elbow into my opponent's side as I grab him by the back of his jersey. My helmet glances off the plexiglass as I dig in.
"Get the fuck back, Sin," Marlowe grunts.
We used to play together in Detroit way back when. My knee slips between his legs as we battle for the puck at the boards. Our shoulders jostle, pads colliding.
"Hope your wife won't mind your crying tonight," I grunt back at him. "Maybe grab some tissues on the way home." "Fuck you, Beaumont."
"You're not my type, Marlowe. Told you before." Over the deafening crowd, I hear him laugh.
"You still pining after moaning Zoe, man? Not that I blame you. Her ass is..."
I drive my elbow into his pads. Not enough to cause injury. I play hard. Ruthless, but not dirty. But the force of my weight sends him sprawling to the ice. Way back when, Ken Marlowe used to fist bump me for pulling stunts like this one. From the way he eyes me through the grates of his helmet, he's had a change of heart. He clambers to his skates, lunging toward me, gloved fists raised, just as one of the linesmen skates over and blows the whistle, indicating to the referee that I messed up and deserve to serve time for elbowing. Again. I skate toward the penalty box without a backward glance. The crowd is a cacophony of boos and applause as the fans take their sides. It's a sound I've been living for since I was just a kid growing up in the suburbs of Ottawa, Canada. Nowadays, though, those boos and cheers equal a paycheck, making me the top-paid enforcer in the league. King Sin Bin. That's me. Meanest bastard on the ice. Man with a heart of ice. I fucking wish that was true. As the second line hits the ice, I think of Zoe from earlier today, her dark eyes flashing with sardonic humor when I connected the dots that she's my new publicist. My jaw clenches. While the position might be hers, I refuse to ever cross those blurred lines with her again. I like my life. It's simple. Easy. Zoe makes me think. Makes me feel. And that just won't do. I grind my teeth. Once upon a time I considered Zoe my closest friend. Before I allowed lust to get in the way. Before I was so desperate for her that I ignored all the signs that Zoe wanted more than I could give her emotionally. Better to keep her at arm's length now than to potentially get back in too deep. I stare at the rink through the plexiglass and swallow past the growing lump in my throat. This is the right move for both of us. And if I happen to have saved some of the final texts she ever sent me, that'll just stay with me. King Sin Bin. Man with a heart of ice. My fingers dig into my thighs. Yeah, we're all better off this way. If I could only forget the vision of her shocked face the moment she saw me today. Damn it. But it felt good to be in the same room as her.
Chapter 4. Zoe. I spend the rest of my day half fearful that Andre Beaumont will track me down and throw me into Boston's Charles River. It's March, and still frighteningly cold outside, and the black, murky depths of the city's popular strip of waterfront does not look enticing, thank you very much. But the look Andre gave me just before I left Walter Collins' office this afternoon? Oh yeah, he's planning something. The what, however, has eluded me thus far. In fact, I'm so wound up after the entire experience that even my dad, who is perhaps the most unaware person I've ever met, notices that something is up during dinner. Zoe, he says, as he dumps a lump of mashed potatoes onto his plate. You okay today? Fred McKinsey isn't the sort to talk about those pesky things called feelings, and so I spare a quick glance at Shelby, my stepmother, who only shrugs and mouths, humor him, right? My dad and Shelby married when I was in my teens, but since I've always lived with my mom, well, time spent with my dad has always been on the fly. Random weekend trips here, a full week school vacation there. The last 6 months in Boston have proven to be an eye-opening experience, that's for sure. I'm already planning my escape the moment my first paycheck lands in my bank account. I grid myself for his interrogation by shoving another slice of meat into my mouth and use the time spent chewing, Shelby overcooked the pork chops, to prepare what I'm going to say. Finally, after I've managed to swallow the pork and not choke to death, I announce, "Well, I got the job." My half-sister Tia squeals and fist pumps the air. "Oh my God, I knew you would!" I love Tia. With her brown hair and dark eyes, she's the spitting image of me, just a younger me, with heaps more enthusiasm and a zest for life that adulthood hasn't yet kicked to the curb. "Thanks for letting me practice my interview on you, T," I murmur, and a wide smile pulls at her mouth.
"What's the catch?" Dad says, pointing his fork at me. "You look like someone ran over your dog, then did it again."
"Fred!" Shelby shoots a pointed glance at their 12-year-old daughter. "Let's lay off the graphic images, please." Dad's gray brows pull down, like he can't quite grasp the concept that maybe his youngest child shouldn't be thinking about dying dogs. "Hell, I don't want to think about dying dogs."
"Well, she does look like it,"
is all he grumbles. I assume he's referring to the dog comparison, which, you know, isn't the worst non-compliment I've ever received from Fred McKinsey. There was that time he accidentally said I looked pregnant during one of my visits. I was 14, and he followed up that comment with bringing me to the drugstore and handing me a pregnancy test. Mind you, I was still a virgin. There was also that time that he drunkenly told me he wasn't sure that I was his kid when I was 16. I've since learned to take what my father says with a grain of salt, something that Shelby clearly hasn't learned to do, despite the fact that she's been married to him for over a decade. "How about sad?" she prompts, her blue eyes locked on Tia in worry. "Zoe looks sad."
"She doesn't look sad,"
my dad counters, color infusing his cheeks. "Oh, crap. Here we go again." I try to catch Tia's eye, but she's too busy pushing the food around on her plate. Wanting to put a smile on her face, I kick her foot under the table with just enough force that she knows it wasn't accidental. Her dark eyes flick over to me, and she makes a "what are you gonna do" face, complete with a slack mouth and half-closed eyes, like she's 5 seconds away from falling asleep at the table. I return the look, not caring how silly I appear in sisterly camaraderie.
"She looks pissed,"
Dad finishes, thrusting his fork in the air. "Now Shelby looks pissed."
"Language, Fred."
"Shelby, it's my house. If I want to say pissed, I can say it however many times that I want."
Eyes narrowing, Shelby seethes.
"Don't you dare, Fred Elliott McKenzie. Don't you dare."
"Well, I think this is our cue." I nudge Tia again with my foot, jerking my head toward the doorway that leads to the living room. She nods curtly in silent agreement. We grab our plates, utensils, and glasses of water, and stealthily escape the fray. Not that there's need for any stealth, because Dad and Shelby have erupted into a fight that borders on the nonsensical. I enter the living room just as my dad breaks out into a song that consists only of the word pissed. He hits the high notes like a champ, then drops his voice down to an Elvis Presley-worthy croon. Back in the day before he opened an Italian restaurant and lost his soul to meatballs, fettuccine, and marinara sauce, I recall my dad having dreams of becoming a professional singer. Apparently, this is as close as he gets nowadays. I follow Tia up the flight of stairs to the second level of the house. Second door on the right is hers, and we quickly settle on the carpeted floor, picnic style, with the door half cracked. "I'm sorry," she mutters, sounding so morose that my gaze immediately jumps to her face. "For what?" She points to the floor in indication of the adults who aren't acting like adults. "You know, about Dad and Mom." I hide my wince. Growing up, it had only ever been my mom and I. Two women against the world. Marcia McKenzie, she never reverted back to her maiden name, has never been inclined to date, perhaps because her relationship with Dad was so toxic. Even now, she prefers to go out with her girlfriends for cocktails over spending time with a man. Sure, I never had the ideal family unit, but I would take my childhood over Tia's any day. In the 6 months since I've moved in, there hasn't been a day where Dad and Shelby haven't broken out the figurative knives and sharpened them on each other's flesh. "It's okay," I tell my sister, as I kick off my shoes and tuck my legs under me. I still haven't changed out of my interview outfit, so the slim-fitting dress inches up my thighs. Since it's only Tia, I don't bother to shield her from my black Spanx. "Don't worry about it, T." Her thin shoulders lift with a shuddery breath. "But you got the job, and I know you're going to leave soon." As much as I want to get out of this house on a permanent basis, the thought of hurting Tia breaks my heart. So I go for the slip-around-the-issue option. "What? Where am I going to live if I do that? In the Boston Commons?" She giggles, just as I intended her to. "Are you going to put up a tent?" I fake glare at my half-finished plate of food. "I don't have a tent." The idea of me being tentless sparks more laughter from my sister, evil creature that she is. "What if it rains?" she prompts. "Guess I'm going to be soaked." "What if it snows?" I pin her with an expression of pure horror, and she howls with laughter. "Are you trying to make sure that I never want to leave this house?" I demand. "What if there's a tornado and it whips through the park and you get taken with it?" "Boston doesn't have tornadoes," I gripe with a half grin. "And you're evil, you know that?" "So, you're going to stay?" She swipes a thumb under her eye to catch a tear. She laughed too hard at my expense, and proceeds to shovel the rest of her food into her mouth at top speed. I both admire and envy her youthful metabolism. Around a forkful of corn, she asks, "Please?" "Yeah, I'll stay. For now." At 27, I miss my freedoms of being completely independent, walking around in my underwear and a t-shirt at the top of the list, as is enjoying the company of men. But since men haven't really been on my radar for quite some time now, I guess I just miss the underwear t-shirt bit the most. The thought of men, however, makes me think of Andre. We're due to have our first meeting tomorrow, and I'm both dreading it, and strangely also anticipating the thrill of being in his company. The thrill of drawing his blood, I mean. The 30-day trial at Golden Lights Media looms large, like a dark gray cloud over my head. Whether Andre wants to or not, he's about to become the most clean-cut hockey player the NHL has ever seen. Game on. Chapter 5. Zoe. 29 days left. Andre doesn't show for our meeting. Walter barks at Gwen, demanding to know where the company's newest bad boy client is. Gwen, in turn, sidles up next to me in the office kitchen, red hair bigger than the day before, to ask if I've heard from him at all. "Nothing," I tell her. I feel like I've been stood up at prom. I spend the first 30 minutes after our scheduled meeting time at my new desk, rearranging the pretty flowers I've brought in to force life into my otherwise barren office. The floor-to-ceiling windows allow for a lot of natural light, but the walls are white, the carpet is white, my desk is white, the damn door is white. I made the grave mistake this morning of wearing a white sweater dress and nude heels, which means that I fit right into the sterile-like environment that now belongs to me. For 30 days, if I don't totally screw up. After that exhilarating part of my morning, I spend the next 27 minutes organizing the mess in the desk. Whoever had the office before me was a hoarder. Tampons, 3 iPhone chargers, 10 packs of gum, 6 sleeves of post-it notes, and 4 travel books about Paris are all crammed into the top drawer. When my fingers land on a square, telltale foil, I cringe and throw the condom packet into the waste bucket with a grimace. Naturally, the following 20 minutes are spent sanitizing the entire office, starting with my white desk chair and ending with the brass doorknob. Who knows what kind of debauched crap went down in here. And no, I don't feel like a hypocrite by saying so. At least Andre and I did it in the laundry room, where the laundry was dirty. Ugh, that doesn't make me feel any better. Gwen pokes her head into my office around 2 p.m. "Nothing yet?" she asks, and I feel the weight of my 29 and a half days like a guillotine poised over my head. "Did you try the cell phone number in the file?" "Yes, in fact, I called and texted the jerk no less than 3 times. He must know what this job means to me. Instead of pulling on his big boy pants, however, he's run scared. This isn't at all like the Andre Beaumont I know, but then again, it's been almost a year. People change unless I have. Whatever starry visions of Andre I had way back when are now non-existent. Gwen's blue gaze flits over the office. "You cleaned?" I shift on my bare feet, wishing I hadn't kicked off my heels around the time that I started scrubbing the windowsill. I needed something to do. "Want to clean my office?" she says, although I'm not sure that she's joking. With the Windex bottle clutched in one hand and a paper towel in the other, I say, "Will it keep me at Golden Lights for longer than 30 days?" Her expression seesaws as she presses her back against the open door. "I'm sorry about that." I shrug. "I get it. Because I do. I'm a liability." I place the Windex bottle on my desk and throw the dirty paper towel away into the waste bin. The office smells like fresh lemon, its past sins all but wiped away. "So, is it weird?" My heart squeezes. Here it comes. "What do you mean?" "You know." She widens her eyes in that way people do when they want you to pick up the clue that they aren't actually putting down. "With Andre. After everything that happened last year, it must be weird to know that you'll be working with him again." Do I go for honesty? Play the oblivious tactic? Not that I think Gwen would fall for the latter. She may sound like she's interested in my answer as a friend, but her gaze is way too sharp for my liking. So I do what any woman in my position would do. I play it cool, like seeing my one-time fling hasn't completely rocked me off my train to Happy Land. "It's fine," I tell her smoothly. "Of course, it'd be better if he showed up for our meeting this morning, but he's a hotshot hockey player. I'm sure he just forgot." It's unlikely Andre has forgotten anything. All morning I've toyed with a new suspicion, that he didn't show because he wants me to be fired. If that's the case, he's got another thing coming to him, because I'm not going anywhere. If this is my last chance at a career in my chosen field, then I'm going down with fists flying. Andre Beaumont won't even know what hit him. Seeing that she isn't likely to get any information out of me, Gwen gives me a smile that verges on pitying. She knows. She knows that I'm a half step away from stalking Andre down and forcing him to do my non-sexual bidding. "If you want to take off for the day, feel free," she tells me, her gaze falling to the fancy rose gold watch encircling her wrist. You can't really shape up Beaumont's career without Beaumont, so you might as well head home and prepare for battle. My fingers twitch at that. I feel like I've been in battle for the good bit of a year, but this is something different. I need to be strategic. I need to get my ducks in a row and start my plan to wipe Andre's stained reputation clean. He doesn't want to lose his sponsorships. I don't want to lose this job. In theory, we should be on the same page. In theory, the next 29 days should be easy. In theory, I shouldn't feel the least bit tempted to want another taste of Andre Beaumont after a year of radio silence. But I do. What they say about thin lines between love and hate? Well, the line between lust and hate is even thinner. And as I stuff my laptop into my work bag and stuff my feet into my stilettos, I'm horrified to realize that I'm just as annoyed that Andre didn't show professionally as I am at the sinking thought that he didn't show for me. And the latter just won't do. No way am I letting lust get the better of me. Not even for Andre Beaumont. Chapter 6. Zoe. I barely get my foot over the threshold at home before my dad comes flying down the stairs. In his arms, he juggles his striped chef pants, coat, and a set of large-as-my-forearm menus. The moment he sees me, his terse expression breaks, like he's seen the second coming.
Zoe, thank fucking God!
It's Thursday and a school week, which means that Tia is in class and Shelby is at work. But I nevertheless glance over my shoulder. Aren't you supposed to be watching the language thing?
No time.
He grunts as he drops his armful onto the entryway table and shoves his feet into a pair of non-slip kitchen shoes.
The GM just called. My chef quit, took half the wait staff with him, the bastard, and we've got a full house tonight.
I decide to let the language thing slide for the sake of not starting an argument. My gaze flicks to the menus. So you're calling in the reinforcements?
I am the reinforcement.
With that, he snaps to attention and puffs out his chest. And it would have been somewhat adorable dad cute, except that he ruins the ideal fatherhood image by cursing like a sailor when the menus slip from the table and scatter all over the floor. Still in my stilettos, I dip low and gather what I can.
What are you doing home so early?
He demands roughly on my way back up. Early day. Still no word from Andre. I'm starting to think that I was right. He's totally sabotaging me. I plan to spend the night with a glass of wine, a heaping of chocolate, and my day planner. He can avoid me for one day. He can't avoid me for 30. By tomorrow, I'll have my plan sorted to get his butt towing the line of respectability again.
Come to the restaurant with me.
At Dad's random outburst, my jaw slackens. What? I don't cook. He rolls his eyes.
I'm not asking you to cook. Remember when you spent a summer or two being a server at the restaurant?
I remember hating my life when I dropped a hot plate of steaming mussels and clams all over the mayor of Boston. Seafood went flying, smacking the mayor's wife in the breasts and landing in the mayor's lap. The mussels were hot. The wine-infused sauce even hotter. Dad promptly banned me from entering his restaurant, Vittoria, until just a few years ago. You can see why I'm not too thrilled about the prospect of returning. For the sake of Boston's citizens, it's best if I don't touch anything that threatens with a steaming good time. Slowly, I say, I don't think that's a good idea. Dad doesn't get the hint.
Think of it as father-daughter time.
Oh, low blow. I suck in a breath. We can have father-daughter time after you come home tonight. You know, with a movie or something.
Please.
For the record, Fred McKenzie does not say please. The last time I heard him do so, Shelby was giving birth to Tia as he paced the hospital's hallways, alternatively cursing God and also praying for a vasectomy. No more kitties for Fred. Not after Tia. Taking a deep breath, I stare at my father resolutely. He may call it father-daughter time, but it's the furthest thing from his mind. He wants help, and he wants help now. And I'm the only one around that he can push into doing his bidding. 2 hours later, I'm decked out in Vittoria's server uniform. Black pants mold to my legs, and a crisp white button-down is fitted over my torso. I've rolled the sleeves up to my elbows, and my dark hair is pulled back in a high ponytail. I don't know how I've managed to get myself into this situation, but I can promise you it's as bad as I remember.
Do you know the menu?